our joint hearing, but we did see your handout, and I'm very excited to hear from you this morning, this afternoon.
Thank you, Senator Pappas, and members of the committee. Thank you for the opportunity to come this afternoon and share just briefly some information about underrepresented students and then some brief information about programs and initiatives to address the achievement gap. You should have a copy of the PowerPoint at your places. We were asked to provide some information to you about the definition of underrepresented students, and there really isn't one single definition that is accepted all across the board, but there are some characteristics of underrepresented students that are typical. First is that they're characteristically low-income students. They're students who would be the first in their family to attend college. They're typically students of color, particularly Black, American Indian, and Hispanic, and they're English language learners. There are some characteristics that of the achievement gap that carry through from K-12 into higher ed, and I just have a few slides about the K-12 preparation. This first graph shows that demographics are changing in Minnesota. The K-12 system is the bellwether for that. In this graph, you can see for the period 2001 to 2007, the number of students of color increased while the number of white students declined significantly. This next graph shows high school graduation activities, and the chart illustrates Minnesota public high school graduation by race and ethnicity, and the bars represent the number of high school graduates as a percentage of 10th graders 3 years later. And as you can see on the graph, the American Indian, Hispanic, and Black students are not graduating at the same rate as their white and Asian counterparts. This next graph shows K-12 achievement gap, and this is based on the state's Minnesota Comprehensive Assessment in Reading that's given to all 10th graders. The next chart shows the same kind of information, but for the area of mathematics, the gap is even greater in mathematics than it was in reading. On the ACT college prep exam, ACT has established some benchmarks for predicting college success in four subject areas. The threshold scores they have set are identified as scores needed to have a good chance of getting a C or better in their first year of college coursework. Few students meet the benchmark score for all four areas, and again, for the various ethnic groups, it just points out, again, the great achievement gap there. Now, the next few slides that we're going to look at shows how the achievement gap plays out in post-secondary education. In the undergraduate enrollment in Minnesota, 22% of all non-white students came from families with incomes less than $30,000. 26% of Minnesota post-secondary students were first in their family to go to college. And 12% reported that one or more their or both of their parents were not born in the United States. Now, the undergraduate enrollment really mirrors what's happening in Minnesota's population. The state population for ages 18 to 24 is the non-white percentage was 15%. And the undergraduate enrollment was 16%, and these are both for 2005. Now, on the surface, the data shows that, or it would appear that no racial or ethnic group is really underrepresented. But the next few slides look deeper to reveal some real differences in enrollment and completion patterns. Enrollment patterns do vary by race and ethnicity. From this slide, you can see that white students have a tendency to attend full-time, and they also have a tendency to attend four-year institutions, whereas with students of color, they have a tendency to attend two-year two-year institutions and attend part-time. In this next slide, we have some information based on four-year institutions, and degree completion rates vary by race and ethnicity in this case as well. Of the students who enrolled for the first time at four-year institutions in 2000, the orange bar represents what percentage graduated within 4 years. The red bar represents those who graduated within 6 years. The white bar represents those who transferred out to another institution within 6 years. And the light blue bar represents those who neither completed nor transferred within the within 6 years. The next graph shows the same information for two-year institutions. Again, those that graduated within 3 years, they transferred out within 3 years, or they didn't complete within 3 years. That's just a very brief overview of kind of the situation with underrepresented students in general. Now, you should also have in your materials a chart. It's a rather large, 11 by 17. And if you flip it over to the side that just has the three entries on it that says other statewide initiatives, I'd just like to go through those rather quickly first. These are three initiatives that the legislature did fund in the last budget session, and they're administered by our agency. The first one is the Intervention for College Attendance Grants, and these grants are programs that are serving underrepresented students. The programs vary in that they have programs for anywhere from 6th through 12th graders. The grants are competitive, and they address things such as increasing the high school graduation rate, the college participation, and success rate. The next entry, Advising and Counseling Grants for College, this program is new, and it is a program where we will be giving our first grantees this spring. The responses to the RFP have come in the office. This is a statewide initiative that is targeting 8th, 9th, and 10th graders, and it's being funded out of the ACHIEVE money that you appropriated to the agency. We have an I Make It Happen campaign. This is a collaborative effort between the various higher ed systems, our office, and the Minnesota Department of Education. The program has an online high school counselor where students can either email this person or telephone this person with questions that they have about anything related to preparing for college, or if they have a question about the ACT or any myriad of things that a student might want to ask a question about related to going on to college. We have a website for this particular initiative, and there are some new things that are being planned this summer and fall, and it is a really great collaboration between the higher ed systems and our office. In the last one, each system or group has contributed to this initiative, as well as the Minnesota Department of Education, and we have a small grant from the North Star Foundation for this initiative. If you flip the chart over to the front side, these are examples of programs and initiatives that are operating in Minnesota. It's not meant to be an all-inclusive list. There are a variety of other things going on in the state, but I wanted to kind of give you an idea of the breadth of types of programs that are operating. The first one is the Get Ready program. It's administered by our agency. It's mostly funded under a federal Gear Up grant. We're currently serving students in grades 4 through 9. We have a little over 3,900 students that are receiving direct service in this program. There's an outreach component for the program, and we're serving over 7,200 students currently, and that number is increasing. Our direct service is in seven schools in St. Paul, and they're listed in that third column. and there are 5 schools in Minneapolis. There is a curriculum that has been developed for our elementary and middle school students, and our high school curriculum is being developed now. We have college students that are tutoring our get-ready students primarily in the areas of reading and mathematics. We have a parent involvement component. There is a career planning component to the program, and we also offer scholarships to students to attend summer academic camps in the summer. The next program that is listed are TRIO programs. These are by far the oldest established programs that have been operating in the state. They serve the largest number of students. In 2005-06, they served over 12,000 students. And these programs are offered at private and public post-secondary institutions of the state. And the key services are academic, vocational, and career counseling, financial aid and admissions assistance, GED prep and testing referrals, and there's a great collaboration between TRIO programs and other college access programs that are operating in the state. Admission Possible is a program that many of you are probably familiar with. Admission Possible provides ACT and SAT test preparation. In this 07-08 school year, they are serving 1,200 students. They are in 15 public high schools and charter schools in Minneapolis and St. Paul. They assist students with completing college applications, essay writing. They help them obtain financial aid and scholarships. And these students that participate in Admission Possible are required to participate in at least 8 hours of community service. There is an expectation that these students have at least a 2.5 GPA to participate, but there are exceptions to that made. The next program, Destination 2010, is an initiative of the Minneapolis Foundation. There are currently a little over 200 students out of an initial 450 students that are participating. In the column labeled program delivery locations, I've listed the locations where students that started out in the program where they're currently attending. This program connects students with community resources, summer camps, and academic support. They do require parent involvement, and the parent has to sign off on an application form. And it is a program that other programs have collaborated with as well. Project Success is a little bit different kind of program. They serve 8,000 students. They have schools in Minneapolis and just this year added some schools in St. Paul. This program has goal-setting workshops in classrooms, and they have a high amount of activity related to students trying to achieve goals, personal goals, finding out who they are, and they have great collaborations with theaters throughout the metro area, particularly the Guthrie Theater. They have students that are participating in a number of opportunities there. They take the students on college tours, and our Get Ready program collaborated with them just recently on a DVD where college students are actually talking to younger students about attending college and what that all entails. The AVID program is a program that you have heard about previously in a session that you had in January. And this program targets students in the academic middle of their class. In Minnesota, they're serving grades 6 through 12, and in academic year 2007, there were 2,015 students that were first to attend college, historically underserved and low-income students that were participating in this program. There is some more specific information about what that all entails in the program overview. And the last program that's listed is Achieve Minneapolis. You're going to be hearing from them today, so I'm not going to go into a great amount of detail there. They do target high school students. They're in Minneapolis high schools, and their whole purpose is to ensure that all Minneapolis public high school students plan out their futures, and I'm sure that they will be sharing much more information with you. So if you have any questions, I'll try to answer them.
Is it possible that students participate in more than one program?
Yes, it is. In some schools have more programs operating in their particular schools. Programs that are in the schools, they try not to overlap services, but there are some students that are receiving services from a variety of programs, and then there are some students in that same school that don't have any kinds of opportunities. So there, that is an issue, but I know with our programs, we try not to duplicate services.
But different programs have, they're different things they're trying to do. I mean,
yes.
They're all trying to get kids into school,
right.
But not all of them are helping them with their ACT tests.
That's correct.
For example.
That's correct. So they, most of the programs have a niche, something that they capitalize on that they're trying to do for students. And as you know, students have different needs. Some students need a wide variety of things, and other students need more targeted kinds of things.
Senator Wicker.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Ms. Dresbach, for Destination 2010, I noticed that less than half of the initial participants in third grade completed, though there was the incentive of a $10,000 scholarship or $5,000 for vocational. Do you have further information as to why?
I don't have, Senator Wicker and Madam Chair, members of the committee, I don't have specific information. There's a lot of mobility, for one thing, with the students that participate in these programs. Sometimes they just move out of the geographic area that the programs are being offered, and you can see that there are quite a number of schools that Destination 2010 has students in. If they move completely out of the metro area, they don't have the staff or the resources to continue to serve those students. That's about what I know about why such a drop.
Well, Madam Chair, Ms. Dresbach, you're saying it's primarily mobility?
That's my understanding.
Or the 55%.
That it is primarily mobility issues.
Senator Roebling.
Thank you. And I was going to ask about that, too, because that's a big drop in students in a program with a big reward at the end. But I guess it's frustrating when you showed the earlier slides and we were talking about preparedness for college level work. And on page 3 of this, and it was showing the achievement gap, and there is some statistics here showing that the reading levels of students in 10th grade and looking at some of the minority populations being under 30% for meeting the reading standard for 10th grade. And I just find it so frustrating as part of the higher ed committee that the work has to be done so much sooner than here. If they aren't prepared, you know, we say they're underrepresented. But are they underrepresented because they're unprepared? And that is something that we try and get at with some of these programs, these, you know, like Get Ready program and things like that. But it's got to go back to the K-12 system or early childhood or K-12. I mean, it's got to go back a long ways. And we're never going to solve this if less than 30% of a minority group has reading proficiency at the level they're supposed to be. That means at least 70% will never be eligible for college. And, you know, maybe they'll go to a 2-year college or trade school or something, but that's a lot of students that will simply not even be eligible, or if they do go, they may not make it. They may find some help at the college level, but that seems to be the wrong time to be providing it. And so it's just very frustrating looking at these and talking about underrepresented students and then realizing that probably they're underrepresented because they're unprepared or underprepared. And I don't know. It's harder in this committee. And I serve on E-12, too. But there's people working hard on trying to improve reading skills right now. There's a big push for that, and I hope that that can succeed, because with statistics like this, we're just never going to make it.
Any other questions? Okay, thank you very much for that update.
Thank you.
I appreciate your work on this area.
Sure.
Achieve Minneapolis.
I guarantee you we will have a lot of stuff coming. It's going to look for P20.
Yeah, and for reading. I mean, reading.
Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Senator Pappas and members of the committee. My name is Catherine Jordan. I'm the CEO of Achieve Minneapolis. We're the local education fund that supports the Minneapolis Public Schools. Our mission is to galvanize community resources to support student success. And I'm here today with two students, Kafia Ahmed, who's now at the University of Minnesota, and Jose Munoz, who is a student at Patrick Henry High School. I'm going to give you an overview, and then each of them will give some of their personal reflections and account of how they've been involved with the career and college initiative that I'm going to share with you. You've just heard some very dramatic and important testimony about where we are with our young people in the state of Minnesota. We, as an organization supporting Minneapolis Public Schools, have struggled with, you know, what do we do now to make sure that all of our students, not just some students, but all students are successful and are able to go on to post-secondary education. We know very clearly that the job market is changing dramatically. It's not the same kind of high school situation that probably you and I experienced when we were in high school. It's a very different world. And we cannot afford to lose any one of our young people. So all of our 10,000 high school students is what we are working on to make sure that they have a plan for graduating from high school and moving on into some kind of post-secondary education. So what we've done is we've created career and college centers in all of the 8 high schools in Minneapolis. These are fully equipped. We have a full new computer system. We have put a staff person in each one of these centers that we've employed from Achieve Minneapolis. So we've kind of found a way to create a portal into the schools where we can bring the resources of the community in to work with our students. We've also created something called My Life Plan, which is currently a 9th through 12th grade planning process or strategy process to make sure that young people, because they are really our most important generation we've ever had. These young people are speaking hundreds of languages or 100 languages in Minneapolis. They are our future, and we need to make sure that they have the skills and the tools to be able to be successful. Yes, I agree that every one of them needs information earlier on to be prepared, but we've got young people who are very committed and energized and want to make a difference and need to be supported in that process. So these career and college centers, the 8 of them that we have, are the kind of marketplace for all the different programs that you've heard about so far, Mission Possible, Project Success, Girls in Action, a number of programs, the TRIO programs, which have served different kinds of populations. We're bringing them all together in one place where we can make sure that we map the student body so we know who is supporting whom. We want to make sure that every one of our young people has the support and the tools they need to be successful. The My Life Plan is a process that helps students answer 4 basic questions. Who am I? Where am I going? How do I get there? And what skills and education do I need to be successful? A lot of our young people that we're now working with do not have the luxury of families that have gone through the higher education or even sometimes the secondary education process. So they don't have the clear map in their heads or in their families' heads about what are the steps. How do you identify what kind of career you might be interested in? A lot of our young people aren't aware of the new kinds of jobs that are coming along. Many of them don't understand how you apply for college or how you apply for financial aid. So we are engaging parents, community groups, volunteers, the school itself to integrate all these tools so that every one of these young people can be successful. Not all of them will go on to four-year colleges, we understand that, but they all need to be successful. We'll have to have some kind of post-secondary education, whether it's a certificate program, a two-year program, and we're working very closely with MNSCU and the Power of You, with also the private colleges, about finding ways to align what we're doing to make sure that our young people are ready. We're also moving now back to sixth grade with My Life Plan and working with Project Success, because they're helping young people to have the dreams about what it means to be successful. And if we can start young people in all sixth grades working on that, eventually we'll have a 6th through 12th grade program that allows us to move all those young people ahead. I'm going to now turn it over to my colleagues, first to Kafia Ahmed, who is a student formerly at Roosevelt High School and now is at the university, and she's going to tell you her story, and then we'll go to Jose.
Welcome, Ms. Ahmed.
Thank you. Like Ms. Jordan said, I'm a freshman at the University of Minnesota. I went to Roosevelt High School. I was part of a Mission Possible. I did programs with CHUV Minneapolis, such as Mission Possible, Step Up, things such as that. I don't know, I guess a little background about myself. I'm one of nine children, and I have three older brothers, all of whom also went to college through programs at their schools. I'm the first generation college student, so like when it comes to like my parents, they don't know that much about the process of going to college and all the things that it requires, but they are very supportive in that. When I was applying to college, I had no idea things like ACT, FAFSA, things such as that. But I applied to 6 schools, 15 scholarships, kept me busy senior year, that's for sure. I got into, I think, 5 of the 6 schools I applied to and full scholarships to 4 out of the 5. And I eventually chose the University of Minnesota for different reasons, study abroad, and such as that. I'm majoring in actually political science and global politics. I plan on going to things like humanitarian aid, the United Nations, the World Health Organization. But like when I was in high school, there was a lot of, I went to a high school where it was, I guess you would say, like an urban school. So there's all the kids that were high achieving, and then there was a huge gap, and there was a student that, you know, it was either you did or you didn't. And a lot of the resources you had to go out and find yourself. So a lot of this requires personal motivation on the part of the student to find the resources, because for the most part, they are out there. As a student, I felt that I surrounded myself with the people that, you know, would get me to the places I needed to be. All of my friends went to college and were all first generation, were all minorities. I wasn't born here. I actually came here when I was 6 years old. I speak 3 or 4 languages, depending on if it's a good day or not. and I have the skills, things like that you would never know to put on your college applications, things that, the skills, like for me, speaking different languages is normal, and I do it kind of freely, but you never think, oh, look, let me put this on my college application because it makes me look like a good candidate to go to college and to the kind of student that admissions officers are looking for. But being in the Career and College Center and having someone like Mr. Walker, who's in the one at Roosevelt, tell me that these are the things you need to do to make yourself stand out and be a candidate, a young woman of color who's academically successful at school and involved, looks great on college applications. So you need to put everything you've ever done to make yourself be the person that they want to be. So they're there for that motivation, and the students have, some students do and some students don't, but the ones that do have like the skills already, we need to be told that these are skills that are transcend and things that you can take with you into college and such as that. So they're very much a big push forward for us. So
thank you.
You're welcome.
Jose. Hello, my name is Jose, and I'm a senior at Patrick Henry High School, and I am a participant in the Admission Possible program that is actually situated in the Computer Career and College Center at Henry. And as a junior, they worked with me in preparing for the ACT and actually taking it. But then senior year, we basically just live in the Career and College Center. We live on the computers looking for scholarships through the Naviance program. And that's actually where I've applied, where I found all my scholarships. So I don't know where I would have looked if it wasn't for that program. But as a senior, we just live in that area, and that's where we applied for college. We filled out the FAFSA, and at any given moment in the Career and College Center, you'll find students that have free hours, and that's where they spend their time. And so I'm really thankful that we have the resources there, because I don't really know if I would have put as much effort into financial aid, because I don't really have the time anywhere else. So it's good to go after school and have that, the two-hour block of admission possible, to actually do something that would help me be more successful in the college process. And so to date, Admission Possible has helped me apply to 11 colleges, and I've gotten accepted to most of them so far, and I'm still kind of waiting to hear back. But I don't know if I would have done as much had it not been for the collaboration between Admission Possible and the Career and College Center, because if I wasn't in Admission Possible, I would still have the Career and College Center with Mr. Abdullah, who helps, like, his relationship with the students. He's also our basketball coach, so it's kind of like that friend that you just can go see. And so as far as college goes, I have the resources that I need to get there through Achieve Minneapolis. So.
Thank you, Mr. Munoz. I wanted to ask Ms. Jordan just that very question, is how do you collaborate with some of the other programs that Ms. Dresbach was talking about?
Senator Pappas and members of the committee, that's really what our role is. We're the coordinating organization for the students and the organizations in the schools. Before, when we did our research to start up this whole initiative, we went to each of the schools and found out what was happening. So we knew that TRIO programs were there. There were hired programs. There were different programs for both college access and career exploration. But they were dealing with small groups of students. And there was no effort to create a systemic program so that all students, we're talking about all 10,000 students. So what we're doing, and this Naviance program is a very successful tool for us, we're able to map, we put all the students in the school in this Naviance web-based program, and we can find out, we can map who's working with whom. So we can see somebody's working with Achieve or with the Admissions Possible, somebody's with Hired, somebody's with Project Success, and we can then find out who's not working with the other students, and we can make sure that resources are there. We're not trying to duplicate all the resources that are there. We need to work collaboratively, and I think we've done very successful job of that. We've also worked collaboratively with the counselors. As you're well aware, there are few counselors in the Minneapolis and many urban schools, and we're seen as a resource to them. The My Life Plan and the Naviance organization is really run by the counselors. It's their primary activity to make sure that students are planning and are preparing their academic coursework to be successful. We're working with them by bringing these tools to them and these supportive people, whether they're community-based organizations or volunteers, to work with all students. So I see us as a coordinating organization, as kind of the central marketplace, the one-stop shop where students can come and find out about careers, which we haven't talked much about. We have career fairs where we organize 40 or 50 vendors to come in and talk to students about the variety of careers. We have college visits. We have college reps coming into the career centers. Some of these things would happen in other school districts where there are more resources, but in many urban settings, there is just not the ability of the schools to take this on. I've also prepared a handout for you that details these kinds of things, which I've made available here, as well as the outcomes from our first year. We don't have all of our students going through the plan yet until the year 2010, so we don't have those outcomes. But we can show you where we have been able to move along for the 9th and 10th graders.
And you're currently getting foundation funding?
Yes, this initiative has been funded by the corporations, foundations, and individuals. We had a little startup money from the city of Minneapolis. But this has really been a private-funded initiative. The city of, or the Minneapolis Regional Chamber of Commerce has taken us on as their workforce development strategy and has helped us to raise about $1.5 million. We've raised so far $4 million over the last 3 years to operate this initiative. It costs us about $1.5 million a year, but that reaches the ideas that we will reach all students. So we're looking now, as we've had the private investment, how do we find other kinds of ways of sustaining this and then using this to go beyond Minneapolis, but to take it as a model across the state, because we're really building this business and private partnership with the school district and doing and bringing the resources to bear on these students who are so valuable to all of us.
So you're there physically for students to come to you, but do you go out and do outreach to the students as well?
Senator Pappas and members of the committee, we are currently, we've just hired a parent outreach coordinator who's, because we think another big piece of this is helping parents understand what the process of applying for college or looking for careers and how to prepare for careers, what that process is. So we're working now going to places where parents gather because a lot of the parents we're talking about don't feel comfortable coming into schools. So we're going out to, community centers, to in fact, grocery stores, doing college fairs to alert people about the fact that we need young people to think about post-secondary education. We have been primarily located in the public schools, but we also are working with the park board and the libraries to make sure, because Naviance, this My Life Plan tool, can be used and is electronic. So whether you're at home or at a library or a park or a community center, you can go on and work on your program, which is also useful because there's this mobility issue. And as students move from school to school, they used to have a paper portfolio that was their, to help them with their plan. Well, if you move to another school, that portfolio often didn't go with you. Now it's there. We don't have to print the paper. It's there, and we'll follow the student wherever they are. So that's been our plan so far.
Ms. Jordan, are you familiar with the life plan they use in St. Paul Public Schools? I think that was an internal teacher who created that. Is that different than Naviance?
Senator Pappas and members of the committee, we looked at that is called the six-year plan over in St. Paul, and we worked with St. Paul early on asking them if they would share that with us. And at the time we went to them, they were still in the developmental stages of that, so didn't feel comfortable broadcasting that. But we looked at it and we reviewed it, and we took elements of that, again, these four basic questions. Who am I? So that we do interest inventories and different kinds of assessments so that students can start to understand what their cares and dreams and goals are for themselves. So I think there are similarities in the two plans, but we didn't want to say a six-year plan because we think there'll be kids who'll have 12-year plans or, there are many years. We don't want to narrow it to just 6 years. There's 4 years of high school. There's 2 or 4 years of post-secondary education, and others will go on to even farther than that.
Okay. Okay. Thank you very much for your presentation. We appreciate hearing about the program.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Now we're going to have an update from MinSCU. Based on the money we gave them last year for their recruitment and retention programs. I know. Chinese teeth. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm Mike Lopez, Associate Vice Chancellor for Student Affairs, and thank you for the opportunity to come in and provide an update as to what we're doing with the money that the legislature has provided to Minnesota State Colleges and Universities. I have with me three individuals from Inver Hills Community College who will be providing some detailed information about specific projects later. I'll introduce them right now, though. Barbara Reed is Vice President for Student Affairs. Maichia Herr is a student who has benefited from some of the programming, and Leanne Schmidt is a counselor who has directed some of the projects that we funded. Members of the committee may recall that the legislative request from Minnesota State Colleges and Universities included a $24 million initiative for recruitment and retention of traditionally underrepresented students. And even though specifically earmarked money for this initiative was not included, there was language in the bill which stated that there was funding for initiatives to recruit and retain students traditionally underrepresented in higher education to help prepare students for college, encourage their enrollment, and provide services that enable them to continue successfully to graduation. So our Board of Trustees took this, and they allocated in fiscal year 2008 $11 million that would be spread across the system for programs to recruit and retain traditionally underrepresented students. We allocated $7.4 million of that $11 million for fiscal 2008 on a formula basis to the institutions to make sure that everybody got at least some base level of funding. Each college and university was required, before they got the money, to submit a plan as to how they were going to be using that money, submit some specific recruitment objectives, specific retention goals, and then we will expect them at the end of the fiscal year to provide a report to demonstrate accountability for the funding and how it was used. You have in your, I believe it was passed out to you, about a five-page document, which is just a brief summary, a kind of bullet points about what each college and university said they were going to be using the money for. And as you scan that document, you'll see that by and large, many of the colleges and universities have incorporated in their plans at least one or more of the five best practices that we've identified for retention of traditionally underrepresented students. And these are summer bridge or transition programs to help students make the transition from high school to college, intrusive advising, learning communities, supplemental instruction, and first-year experience or extended orientation programs. And we feel confident that with these methodologies incorporated, that the colleges and universities will, in fact, be successful in achieving their objectives. The remaining $3.4 million for fiscal year 2008 was awarded on the basis of a competitive RFP process for three college access and opportunity centers. And it's our goal for these centers that they will combine outreach services to K-12 schools, that is, that they'll establish partnerships with those schools. They will work with students to develop the college readiness of students to make sure that they do graduate from college and they are ready to undertake college work. There will be professional development activities for teachers in K-12 schools as well as at the universities, and a research component so that we can refine best practices, develop new practices, and then disseminate throughout the system. And indeed, if they are successful, we should be able to disseminate them throughout the country so that other places can use them. The three grants were awarded to joint projects that will be led by St. Cloud State University in cooperation with St. Cloud Technical College, another one for Minnesota State Community and Technical College that will partner with Minnesota State University Moorhead, and then the third project is a joint project by Inverhills Community College in partnership with Century College. And with that, I'll turn it over to the Inverhills folks to tell you what they're doing, or what they have done and what they will be doing.
Before you do that, Mr. Lopez, could you tell me what those best practices are again?
Okay. Summer bridge programs, transition programs, intrusive advising, which involves going out and reaching out to the students rather than sitting back and letting the student come to you or to the advisor. Learning communities, which involves students, a cohort of students taking two or more courses in common, so that they interact with each other, they develop engagement with each other and with the teachers. Supplemental instruction, which is a...
Like tutoring?
It's a very specific form of tutoring, though, because the focus is on the course rather than on the student. What happens is college will identify a course that has a high failure rate or a high dropout rate, and rather than having individual students, say, come in for tutoring, everyone in that course is invited to come in for tutoring. It requires training. It's run out of the University of Minnesota, Kansas City, University of Missouri, Kansas City. They developed the program about 30 years ago, and it is a very, very effective methodology. And then the fifth one is the first year experience course, which is essentially is an extended orientation, how to do a university or how to do college, essentially.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thank you. Then continue.
Thank you, Chair Pappas and members of the committee, for listening to some of our successful ventures at Inver Hills Community College. I also want to acknowledge the very hard work on the advocacy side by Dr. Lopez and the Office of the Chancellor staff in keeping underrepresented students at the center of our mission at the community, the state colleges and universities, because it does take resources. Just as we're going to show you in a minute, our college motto is now finish what you start. So we're exhorting our students to finish a class, finish a semester, finish your program. At the same time, we as administrators, faculty, and staff at Inver Hills and other colleges, we have to persist because this is not a goal that's achieved in one academic year or even 5 years. We've been on this path for several years, but only in the past 5 years have we had the additional financial resources to target some of these student initiatives. So we have been very fortunate at Inver Hills because we have received three separate grants. And beginning in 2003, we were awarded a $50,000 grant for Ideas Plus, which my colleague Leanne Schmidt has chaired and been the energy and enthusiasm behind for the last 5 years and is still doing that work. And last spring, this project received the Minscu Award for Innovative Student Affairs Program. And by that time, we had enough data from the previous years to show a retention success between 7 and 14 points, percentage points between students who were in Ideas Plus classes and our other students. And those differences persisted during four semesters. I would also comment that several of the best practices we started with Ideas Plus, and one in particular is intrusive advising, and I'll let Leanne describe this in greater detail, but we actually are putting expectations for tutoring and study skills and college success strategies in the course. So that's a way of getting to the students where they are in their individual courses. So we're working through academic affairs and frankly, changing our culture at Inver Hills. Secondly, in 2005, we received a grant from our system for learning communities. And Dr. Lopez gave an introduction to that, and Mai Chia will speak to that effort. So we're just collecting several semesters of data here and are, again, showing very, very clear and consistent successes and retention rates for those students in a learning community. So we disseminated this handout, which we call the Inver Hills Retention Tree. And, of course, this afternoon we won't be talking about all of these strategies, but we brought it today to show you that based on the funding we received from Ideas Plus back in 2003, that gave us the tools and the energy to set out to change our culture. And then with the subsequent grant in 2005, the learning communities, you'll see that it's very much the core of our work at Inver Hills and very much based in academics. It's not a student service off to the side. All of these efforts are very fully integrated. But we've seen so many offshoots of this work that people on campus were having trouble keeping up with what was all going on. So that's why we created this tree to just show that we have many, many retention strategies for different populations. And I think the testimony this afternoon demonstrates that one size doesn't fit all, that we can't identify one particular thing that will raise the retention and success rates of our students. So we have a number of target initiatives under these main grants. And finally, I would say just a couple words about the grant that we were awarded just a couple months ago with Century College, Access and Opportunity Center of Excellence. And for that program, we're taking the very best proven results from Century College and our track record and our results from Inver Hills, very refined versions of the five best practices that were just described. And we're in a collaboration so that Century is implementing some things that have worked for us at Inver Hills, and we're implementing some of the things that they have tried. So what this allows us to do is expand beyond these previous grants, which were aimed at first-year college students. And now we will be able to reach back into the high schools and as early as eighth grade. And we will certainly be coordinating with the other programs that exist, the TRIO programs and such, and particularly with the AVID program, which targets the middle half of students in high school. We will be addressing the achievement gap by starting in the early high school years to allow students, to encourage students to come to either Century or Inverhills College and start taking college classes, and we're waiving their tuition. So if they're willing to come and commit to Saturday morning college class, we're going to provide that for a cohort, and we're starting this summer.
While in high school,
so yes.
As a PSEO class?
Well, it will not be PSEO because it won't be limited to those higher-achieving students.
It's summer.
We're starting this summer, yes.
Right. PSEO doesn't fund summer classes.
Oh, okay.
But we're also promoting this among students who may not have a high enough GPA to qualify for PSEO, but they have a determination to go to college. So this will enable us to work with those students at a younger age and make sure they're academically ready for college and also understand what's going to be expected of them. And those are equally challenging areas for us, for students. And then our hope is and our belief is that they will enroll at Inverhills, Century, or another college, but get into one of our learning communities. So we have a very clear pathway for those students. So at this point, I'm going to turn it over to the expert on learning communities, Maichia Herr. And I would just comment that at Inverhills and other colleges, too, retention and success of students is achieved one student at a time. And that's the way we approach students. At the same time, as Leanne will describe, we are very, very cognizant that we need to and we want to demonstrate our success by moving those retention rates, those graduation rates higher and higher. So we're under a constant self-scrutiny of how can we improve this practice or that activity that went well or didn't go well so that we can continue to expand these efforts.
Okay, welcome, Ms. Herr.
Thank you. Of course, thank you for having me here today. I appreciated that. As a first-generation student in my family, college was something that my parents always wanted me to go and finish off. And knowing that my parents do not have any college experiences, while I was born and raised here, I knew that, you know, going to college was the right way to have a life that that is successful. And so in my first semester, or my first time applying to schools, I wasn't sure what I wanted to do, where I wanted to go, because knowing that I have no experience with college, I didn't know where to go. And so I decided to go to Inverhills, and I applied there because maybe going to a two-year college would help me prepare myself to go to a four-year university. And so when I was at orientation, I was very confused about what am I going to do? How do I apply to these classes? Where do I start? And after orientation, we talked to counselors, and they introduced me to a class. It's called the Learning Community, and it has the 3 to 4 classes that correlate together. And when class started, I felt like, why do I have classes with these students again? I mean, it's not like how high school. It's just like how high school is, where I have one class with you here, and now when I go to my next class, how come we're all in the same class again? I didn't really know that it was a learning community until I was told by my last class that, yeah, as you all can see that you guys are all in the same class, it's because you are in a learning community. And as first-time students and first-generation students, you don't know how it is, but gradually I learned that with the learning communities, I became who I am today, because before I took these classes, I would not have the guts to come right in front of people and give out a speech just like today, because I would be the one that's hiding in the corner, or I would wait till the last person to go up to give my presentation. And with that, it's a benefit of becoming someone who you don't know that you are really that someone else. And it's a very good way to be involved with other students in the school and not know, and having your professors out involved with you, because you know that they are always there for you when you need that help or when you are having academic problems. And so I decided to take it after my fall semester, and spring semester went out great. And now that I've taken those classes, it feels like having those learning community classes are perfect as a student who have not had any experience in college before. So it's a very good advantage to do that.
Okay. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Chair Pappas, members of the committee, I'm going to just say a few words from kind of my perspective about the things that we've been able to do with this type of funding. I think it's very nice that we've achieved recognition and awards for our work, but I think it's students like my Chia who need to be congratulated for being successful despite very complex lives and circumstances. But this type of funding allows us to be innovative and creative in finding new ways to support students, including the things that we listed as best practices. I think for a long time we looked for that one thing. We were in search of the one thing that would crack the code to student success. And what we have found and what we've adopted at Inver Hills is that students come to us in all stages of development and with all different backgrounds and all different exposure to higher education. And so this kind of multi-dimensional approach is really the key. Many layers of support, quality instruction, in a campus community really dedicated to student success are what it takes. And so on our campus is a means of getting everyone on board. And if you know our president, Cheryl Frank, you've probably either heard this little mantra or seen the shirt. All of our faculty and staff, every employee on our campus has this shirt that says, finish what you start. That's our mantra for students. And on the back it says, wherever you're going, we'll help you get there. And at orientation we give students blue wristbands that say the same thing. Because what we found is that as we've created more access to higher education for students, it doesn't mean anything if we can't support them when they get there. So we're recognizing that we really need to have programs in place for students once they get on our campus. So as a counselor, I'm blessed to hear stories like my Chia's all the time. And since we can't bring all of those to you, I did bring just a couple of tidbits of data for you. Since we have implemented these types of programs, we have seen a significant increase in our retention of students who participated in these programs. This past fall, students who participated in our learning community and our new class, we call it On Course, it's a freshman year experience, extended orientation class for students. The retention rate for students who were in both of those from fall to spring was 86% as compared to 63% for students who are not participating. And I think for us, that's helped us build the community that sometimes can be missing on a community college commuter campus, so that students like my Chia feel connected and they know who they can come to for questions. Dr. Lopez has made the analogy of a curb cut for us, which I think is a good way to look at this. You know, curb cuts are designed to give people access to buildings or a sidewalk that might not otherwise have been able to access that building due to a disability. But boy, when I'm pushing my child in a stroller, that curb cut really helps me get up there too. Or if I have my bicycle and I need to get it up to a bike rack, that helps me too. So we've created some things on our campus that are really designed to affect a specific population. And what we found is that ultimately, these programs positively impact our entire campus community. So I think investing in these types of student services initiatives and these kinds of best practices is a recognition that our students not only need quality instruction, but they need to learn how to become college students. They don't know how to be successful college students. And so I just want to say that we're grateful to Dr. Lopez and the Office of the Chancellor, as well as to all of you, for your support of our students and the investment in their future.
Great. And thank you all. Thank you very much for that update. Next, we're going to finish with a report on the power of you.
Madam Chair.
Senator Brogan.
Just a quick comment. One of the programs that they have initiated with the grants has been intrusive advising. It just doesn't sound good. I mean, I'm wondering what it is and why they chose to put that name on it.
I think it was Ms. Reed who was talking about that. I mean, I can tell you what I asked that question when you were out of the room, and it is where the counselor just doesn't kind of sit in their office waiting for the student to come to them. They actually go out and find students who are having some academic problems and offer them assistance. So it's a more activist kind of counseling. Is that right? Okay. Great. Senator Sharon.
I don't know if this is an example of that, but when I was on the faculty at MSU, one of the programs that we had in the beginning of the year with new students were to organize in each of the schools the faculty, and we would go into the dorms. We had lists of names of people who were the new students, who were new students addressing a particular field, and going to their rooms and knocking on their doors and identifying ourselves and our giving access to us in terms of phone numbers, and seeing after a period of time when being on campus as a new campus member, what were their questions, what were their difficulties, providing them resources. So that, I think that's what they're talking about, is that you're not waiting for somebody to come to you. You go out and you engage and you sort of, and it sounds, it is, it does feel sometimes like you are being intrusive when you're knocking on somebody's dorm door at 9 o'clock at night.
Okay, we have quite a panel here. And President Davis, are you starting us off?
We're the Minskew Family Singers, Madam Chair. Chair Pappas, members, I'm Phil Davis, the president of Minneapolis Community and Technical College. And we do have quite a panel here, and we'll be introducing them throughout our testimony. But I would like to first introduce Dr. Bill Lowe at my far right, who's the interim president of Metropolitan State University. Dr. Donovan Schwitzenberg, who is the president of St. Paul College, the third of our three Power of U institutions, is ill today and is not able to be here with us. For those of you who know Donovan, you know it takes a lot for him to miss something like this, so undoubtedly he's quite ill. And we have students and members of the employers, funders who are going to speak as well. I want to introduce Dr. Darcel Hill, who's next to Dr. Lowe, who's an academic advisor in the Power of U program. If I can, we're very grateful to have the opportunity to speak with you about the Power of U. In 2006, our three institutions, Metropolitan State University, St. Paul College, and MCTC, established the Power of U to increase the participation and graduation of students of color and low-income students in college by removing real and perceived financial barriers to attending college. We created the program in response to a growing awareness by business and civic leaders that we had a serious gap in educational attainment, a gap that, according to the National Center for Public Policy and Higher Education, cost the Minnesota economy $1.4 billion every year. We were also alarmed, frankly, by the 2004 report by the Citizens League called Trouble on the Horizon, which predicted that of the ninth graders that year, 3% of African-American and American Indian students and 5% of Latino students would finish a college degree in Minnesota by the time they were 25. Now, in Minneapolis and St. Paul, 70% or more of the students in public schools are students of color, so we knew we'd be leaving a lot of people behind. And that same report concluded that for those with only a high school diploma, they were in a wage category that was fast approaching the poverty threshold, which really reaffirmed that you can no longer expect with only a high school diploma to get a job that has good wages. You need some sort of post-secondary education, which is also what employers need, a skilled workforce. And so we started the Power of U with the support and endorsement of the Minnesota Business Partnership, the St. Paul Chamber, and the City of Lakes Chamber. We created it with a goal of convincing policymakers like yourselves that a public investment in a program like the Power of U would be good for Minnesota, an aspiration that our supporters have as well. We've been very fortunate to have financial support from many of Minnesota's great companies, General Mills, Travelers, 3M, Medtronic, and others, who've invested nearly $4 million so far to support this program. Now, the Power of U is open to spring graduates of St. Paul and Minneapolis public and charter schools who live in either Minneapolis or St. Paul and enroll full-time in one of our three institutions the fall following their graduation. The program is probably best known for its promise of 2 years of college tuition-free, although there are three components. The reach-back component is designed to help families and children plan for college, knowing that it's financially within reach and that it is essential. And we do this by working with organizations like Achieve Minneapolis and the St. Paul Minneapolis YMCAs, and organizations like African American Family Services, to make certain that we reach families and kids at lots of different places, not just in school. The second component, the one we talked about, the financial support component, closes the gap between the federal financial aid that's provided to students who are eligible and the cost of mandatory tuition and fees. And in our first year, we provided approximately $1,100 on average per student to close that gap. And the third component is something you've been hearing about as well today. I called it intensive advising, anticipating you'd wonder what intrusive advising was, but it is indeed one and the same thing. Specialized courses that help students understand how to navigate and be successful in college, and service learning opportunities that promote academic success and retention. Students must maintain their full-time enrollment, and they must fulfill our satisfactory academic progress requirements of all our institutions in order to continue in the program. Now, the results, we think, of this first year were extraordinary. According to Wilder Research, which conducted an independent evaluation of the program, in the first year, we doubled the number of high school students going on to college immediately following graduation, without, I should quickly add, having a negative effect on the enrollment of our sister Minsky institutions, which that same year saw a net increase in the number of Minneapolis and St. Paul graduates going to their institutions. Of the 605 students who enrolled in the program, 357, I should say, under of the 605 who enrolled in one of the colleges, 357 were actually admitted to the Power of U. And of these, 76% were students of color. They had a median family income, household income, of less than $30,000. 30%, it was found by Wilder, 30% said they were not planning on going to college and would not have gone to college if not for the Power of U. And a full 80%, 4 of 5, said the Power of U had a significant influence on their decision to attend college. Now, the most important results are what happened to these students. 85% of the students in the first year completed that first year. And those that returned for the second year represented a 65% increase over our traditional cohort. So not only did they complete at a much higher rate, but they returned as well at a rate of 65% greater than our normal cohort. We think that the program's showing, its early results are showing great promise. Now, since it is designed to serve the needs of Minnesota businesses and workforce needs, we've asked Beverly Turner, who I think many of you will recognize, Vice President of Government Relations at Travelers, and one of our charter supporters, to talk a little bit about the employer perspective.
Madam Chair, before they go,
may I
ask a question just to orient me a little bit? Is this gap financing that's done, the $1,100 per student, is my memory correct that the eligibility for this has to do with having achieved a federal grant first?
Madam Chair, Senator, all students are eligible to enroll in the program if they complete a federal financial aid application. Those that receive some but not a full Pell Grant, for example, would have that gap closed by this philanthropic support.
So that's the criteria for the eligibility, part of the eligibility criteria is met by that Pell Grant process.
Madam Chair, you must apply for financial aid.
Okay.
Now, it isn't dependent on how much you receive.
And may I ask one more question? Did you say 30% of those who apply are underrepresented students?
Madam Chair, Senator Stern.
According to the definitions we've been talking about here.
Actually, 76% would be students of color. It may actually be higher than 76 if we include all low-income first-generation students as defined earlier by the Higher Education Office. The 30% you're referring to was the number that Wilder found, the number of students who were in the program who said they would not have attended college at all had it not been for the availability of this program.
Okay, Ms. Turner.
Madam Chair, committee members, Bev Turner, the Travelers Companies, thank you for the opportunity to testify before you today. Travelers is a leading property casualty insurer that's headquartered in downtown St. Paul. We're very active in the communities where we do business, as it's important to us to stay engaged where our employees live and work. Travelers Foundation supports nonprofit education and provides community development and arts and cultural initiatives as well. We are committed to increasing access to higher education and providing underserved students with the opportunity to excel. In 2007, Travelers launched the Education Access Initiative, the program designed to remove barriers to colleges that underrepresented students face. The initiative is intended to create a synergy between our charitable activities and our diversity recruitment activities as a corporate employer. The Power of You program strongly fits our Education Access Initiative focus and objectives. Demographic changes indicate that the largest population increase will come from communities currently underrepresented in educational institutions. And students from these communities are the workforce of tomorrow. We believe that our business will benefit from the ability to recruit from a diverse pool of talented candidates. The world is diverse, and our customer base is diverse as well. The Power of You program also complements the Insurance Institute within the Business School of Metro State that we began funding this past year. The Institute provides mentoring and classroom speakers to Metro State students coming from our Travelers employees to help them understand the many careers available in the insurance industry. In addition, we expect that the Institute will provide a large pool of diverse students for potential employment and internship opportunities at Travelers companies. In summary, the Power of You program not only benefits the community, but also makes good business sense. Thank you, and I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Great. Thank you very much. Let's move on to the students.
Madam Chair, if I can introduce two extraordinary students from St. Paul College, Lila Schuler, who is an accounting student, who's to my immediate right, and Cheng Li, who is a liberal arts student planning to go into pharmacy. And they're here to talk a little bit about their experiences.
Great. Welcome.
Morning. Thank you, Madam Chair and Committee, for having me. My name is Lila Schuler. I went to Como Park Senior High School, as did my older brother and sister. My oldest sister, she got into college, but she couldn't finish because we couldn't afford it financially. I did want to go to college, but I knew it wouldn't be possible, seeing that my sister couldn't. But in my senior year in high school, only went for half days because I had most of my credits. So I volunteered in a career resource center located in Como. It was a place where students can get different information on careers in universities and colleges. They also had information on scholarships, which is how I found out about the Power of You.
That's smart.
I was accepted into the Power of You in the Power of You program, and I was excited to actually be able to go to college. When I started going to St. Paul College, I really wasn't sure on what to major in because I hadn't really thought about it, didn't think I was going to go. It was kind of a setback not knowing, because knowing that I had 2 years' time, I kind of needed to get on the roll of getting the degree I wanted. And I finally decided on business management and finance. I'm a second-year student, and I plan to transfer to a four-year university this fall of 2008. I hope to get many more scholarships and continue my education, continue my hard work, and keep a high GPA and work towards my BA in finance. And after that, I want a very successful career. I get a lot of help from the advisors. They tell me what classes I need to take. If it wasn't for the Power of You, I wouldn't have came this far. They help me look for things to do after my 2 years with them, which is getting scholarships related, similar to the Power of You, at four-year universities. And they provide you with internships. So if it wasn't for them, I wouldn't have gotten this far, and I plan to go further.
Good for you. Great. Thank you very much.
Hi,
Julie.
I'm glad to be here with all of you guys. And I'm a graduate from Highland Park Senior High, and I just want to give you guys a little bit of detail and background of me. And for me, I wasn't born here. I was born in Thailand, and I moved here when I was 7 years old, and I had no education, no nothing. But I was influenced by my parents to go to college and go to school and get a good life, because my parents never had that chance. And I'm happy that I'm here today, who I am today, and what I've done so far with my life. And when I was about to graduate from high school, my dad, he had kidney problems, and he only had a 5% chance of living, and he didn't tell nobody in the family or anybody else. And as I was graduating, my dad went to Thailand, and I had a hard time just deciding if I do want to go to college or, you know, stay home, because I am the oldest of 8 kids in my family. And I was really deciding, do I just want to stay home, go try to find work, help my family out, or do I want a good education, you know, make more money for my family in the future? So I decided that, you know, maybe I should go to college, because I intended to go, but because of the incident, my dad passed away. It was really hard for me and my family, so I had to choose either one. But I decided that maybe I should go to college, because that's what my mom and dad wanted me to go do in here. So I decided that, yeah, I should go to college. So I went to St. Paul College. I applied a couple of colleges, too. I got accepted, but I had money problem. So I didn't want to go to college, you know, until the Power U came to my school and told us about how we could get free tuition and everything. So I was like, okay, that's a nice deal. I'll, you know, go for it, you know. I'll try what, you know. And then I went for it. And then they helped me out with everything. They knew about my problems. They was there for me when I needed them. They always talked to me. They helped me out, get me involved, keep contact with me and my family. And I was really happy that, you know, they was there for me. There was like another family for me, and besides my family at home. And if it wasn't for the Power of You, I wouldn't be here. And the man I am today, because of them, I'm here and I'm educated. I'm still at going to college, and I plan to go until I'm done with my 2 years and transfer into a four-year education college, where I can continue my education for majoring in pharmacy. So, yeah.
Great. Thank you. Mr. Lee, what's happening with your younger siblings? Are they planning to go to college?
Yeah, they all do, because I kind of influenced them all that, you know, we don't have no daddy, you know, we don't got a mommy, so.
Look at Big Brother.
Yep. So let's all go to college and be successful, help out the family. So I'm really hoping that all my little siblings are, you know, up to that challenge, you know, to get a good life just like the rest of us. Yeah.
I'm sure they really admire their big brother.
Thank you.
Okay, next.
Madam Chair, I think that concludes our formal presentation. I would, with your permission, like to introduce two people. Mm-hmm. Kathleen Gordon, who is the Power of You coordinator at St. Paul College, and Nasreen Mohammed, who's the Power of You coordinator at MCTC, are also in the audience.
You're in the audience? Great, welcome. And was were we going to hear from President Lowe or from Ms. Hill, Dr. Hill? Welcome.
Hello, Senator Pappas and committee. Thank you for the opportunity to share about the Power of You program. I'm very excited about it and passionate about the program because of the opportunities that it provides for the low-income, first-generation students and students of color. This fall was the first cohort of Power U for Metropolitan State University. Our other two partners started this fall. And for this fall, we accepted 26 students into our program, and we are really pleased to share with you that we only lost one student because of family problems, and she had to drop out. But 25 of the 26 are successful and are in the second semester of classes. As an academic advisor, what I do, and you heard the testimony of Leela and Mr. Lee, Chang Lee, that advising is very, very important for this group of students because they're low income, they're first generation, a lot of them don't have the role models in their home because no one else in their home had went to college before. And so as an advisor, I provide them with information on how to navigate college, the kind of courses that they need to take in their first semester to build the academic foundation, because we did find out, as Senator Sharon stated that many of them, even though they were the cream of the crop, as far as the academic guidelines for getting into the program, there were gaps in the academic preparation. So to help them to be academically successful took a lot of negotiation and liaison work with the professors so that they can build into the curriculum those key things that will support the students academically. None of the curriculum or programs were watered down. It's just that we provided additional support with tutoring, with additional office hours that students were allowed to come in and work with the professors, and also with working with them, talking to them about the barriers that could prevent their academic success, time management, helping them to find resources both on and off campus to support them, because even though these are the high school students right out of high school, they had some of the same responsibilities that a lot of our older students had. They had family responsibilities. Many of them had to work 2 and 3 jobs to support their families, and problems with transportation and all of these things. So as an academic advisor, is helping them to access those resources so that they can be successful, and mainly to help them with that managing of the time and the study skills needed, because when I asked a question to the students who came to me, how many hours did you study while you were in high school? And they said, well, we studied 2 or 3 hours a week. Well, what they needed was 2 or 3 hours a day with in their college courses, and sometimes even more. So helping them to open their eyes to the reality of college and college work and academic rigor was really, really important. So I'm excited about that because, you know, everybody says intrusive advising. I also call it proactive advising, because not only did I have to take the initiative to call into the students, meet them, go out to where they are, I also had to be proactive with the professors to find out how they were doing, in getting reports from the professors, finding out if there were some issues or challenges, what they were, how I could work with the professor and the student as a liaison in communicating those successful strategies. And so I'm excited because I know that it's that support, the financial support, as well as the support to be successful in the courses. And so we're very pleased with your support of our initiative with the Power of You program. Thank you so much.
Thank you, and thank you for that update on the Power of You. We really appreciate it and hope to have you back as things progress.
Thank you very much.
We did have one individual that asked to address the committee. We have about 2 minutes left, and that's Tracy Parmenter from Mission Possible.
Is this funded?
Tracy, we literally have 2 minutes for you.
Well, thank you very much, Senator Pappas and members of the committee. I really appreciate the opportunity to be here this afternoon. I just wanted to tell you briefly about Mission Possible and give an update on where we are. As you heard earlier, we work with about 1,200 students in the metro area and in the St. Paul, Minneapolis, Robbinsdale, and St. Louis Park high schools. We work with juniors and seniors intensively for about 2 hours a day, 2 days a week over the course of those 2 years. And we get really good results. About 98% of our students are admitted to college. Once they get admitted, they enroll. So about 95% of our students have enrolled in college. And last year, the Office of Higher Education released a report called Minnesota Measures, which I'm sure you are familiar with, that talked about persistence and graduation rates at Minnesota colleges. And our students persist and graduate from Minnesota institutions at or above the rates of all students in those colleges. And so I think as I was listening to some of the questions in the presentations today, I think one of the lessons that we have seen is that a lot of students from these underrepresented populations do have tremendous potential, and if they're given the opportunity to go on to college, they can persist and succeed just like everyone else.
So, Ms. Parmenter, you're working with the higher-achieving, low-income, first-generation students. Are they... do you have any data about how many were planning to go to college
And you've given them kind of the extra help and the extra support, but they were already planning to college, and how many really didn't think that college was going to be possible for them?
Yeah. Maybe I can put a little bit of context on that, because we don't think of our students as high achieving. We think of them as students who do have the potential, but they might not go without our help. The average student in our program has about a B average, and their ACT score when they enter the program is about the bottom 10th percentile of all students. Their ICT average is about a 15 when they start our program. And so that's the primary barrier for a lot of our students. That's why we focus, as Ms. Dresbach said earlier, pretty intensively on ACT and SAT test preparation, because that's the main barrier for a lot of our students. But as far as how many of them were planning on attending college before they came in, I'd say students who enroll in a program like this think they're going to go to college. The question is sort of, would they have gotten there without our help? And that's a pretty hard one to measure. We've never done like a comparative study or anything.
Mm-hmm. Right, but you're helping getting them ready to go and in.
Yes.
Right.